Europe is complicated. What is the G30? Why does Guy Verhofstadt hate it so much? Previously in Europe, topics.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Previously in Europe. I am one of your co-hosts, Kieran, but if I do say so myself, I am the lesser co-host. The superior co-host is over there, named Hugh. Say hello, Hugh.
Mm-hmm. Well, hello. Thank you for the earned compliments.
I have been put in my place by your humble opening.
Yes. What do we have for this week, Kieran?
Oh, okay. All right, so this week was a combination of sparse for news, and what news did happen was a bummer. Mm. So, like, the big two kind of topics were, like, the Brexit vote, which is not insignificant, no matter how much I try to ignore it. And
it's the biggest modern parliamentary loss ever.
Yeah. Oof, yeah, that was a big one, actually.
In the UK.
When you phrase it like that, yes. Well, the UK also has, like, the largest parliament. So, in raw numbers, it's probably still pretty up there Europe-wide.
The European Parliament's bigger.
But like 100 seats.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something wrong here.
Yeah.
Then the other big story was the death of the mayor of Gdansk, who was stabbed at a charity event in the city of Gdansk by a person in who had just been released from prison. It's kind of a horrifying event for several different reasons, like just the sheer nature of someone being stabbed in like a televised event while he was on stage. The fact that like Poland has gone so right wing that now the classical center right party are considered the enemies. The fact that the largely government-controlled or government-backing like media of Poland is refusing to call this a politically motivated attack. Yeah, and then the fact that like by Polish standards that mayor was like the most progressive elected politician in Poland, which Poland has problems, and that's not really saying much, but he was pretty good, particularly on LGBT issues.
Yes, which, you know, I've gotten pretty dire in Poland, is a bad example for it. Anyway, so we thought instead of talking about either of those things, because, you know, there's not a lot else happened, we'd have a light episode of silly and short things instead, which we're going to do a nonsensey episode instead. And we are going to talk about, revisit, like, the state of Polish politics, possibly next week, maybe the week after. Depends what else happens in the meantime to distract us away. But that is a planned topic which we are looking into at the moment, but didn't want to do immediately now while everything else on the internet is rife with "What Up With Poland" articles that are, some of them are good and some of them are like missing the point, and some of them are just talking about like how either following the even completely following the narrative of, oh, this guy was just like a crazy person, and people who were like really far in the other direction of, they're just saying that it's a cover for their like awful political rhetoric, which, you know, is partially true, but it's not necessarily a helpful way of looking at it.
It's I just wanted to say I started researching Poland politically before it was cool for other far dumber reasons that I will explain at a later date.
Anyway, moving on to our slightly more fun than awful nonsense episode. So the first bit of our nonsense episode is everyone's favorite leathery Italian politician is running for European Parliament. Berlusconi, the man who was barred from holding elected office in Italy just a couple of years ago, is now running for European Parliament. I predict he'll win his seat and then be in the European Parliament. Forza Italia sits with the EPP, so Berlusconi might become technically part of the ruling bloc.
Oh god.
With, people need to remember, Tajani, who is largely seen by a lot of like Italian political commentators as Berlusconi's lackey, is currently the European Parliament president. So Berlusconi holding like a senior post in the parliament is not like a crazy out there thing.
No, it's not. But like, I feel like he doesn't play well. Like, so the other two, like, Italy is a stronghold for the EPP. Another major stronghold for the EPP is Germany.
Yeah.
And I feel like Berlusconi doesn't play well in Germany.
No, but Berlusconi doesn't play well really anywhere outside of Italy.
Where he has a lot of undue popularity.
Yes, and we saw, like, in the last Italian election that he doesn't even play that well in Italy anymore.
Well, like, wasn't the main reason why his party didn't get votes was because they weren't, like, a lot of voters who would typically vote for him didn't vote for that party because he wouldn't become prime minister?
Yeah, I think it's unclear how much of an effect that had. I think the rise of the League is probably more, like, more important because, like, that is no longer the case. Like, he could he could become an elected official now if there were an election held today, but you don't see people en masse saying screw the Salvini guy. I mean, that would be funny.
That'd be nice. If Italy could do that, that'd be cool and swell and great.
Yeah. My prediction for post-May is just, like, sexual harassment investigations in Brussels blow up again, and it just gets more serious. Anyway.
A lot of, like, hanging out with Gaddafi, who was secretly still alive, and just hanging out with Berlusconi.
Yes, and weirdly pro-Putin gifts.
And more weird, awkward stories of Tony Blair.
I'm all for that. I want more of that.
I'm sure he has very strong opinions on Tony Blair's wife. Inappropriate and strong opinions.
Everyone likes Cherie Blair. She seems nice.
I think he probably liked her too much.
Yeah. Let's move on from this to something more technical and less gross.
Hooray! So this is coming back to a country with a very similar flag to Italy, Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a degree, just a little bit of yellow, and then it's orange. Hooray! Not gold.
Yeah.
Orange.
Fun fact, if you're like in Italy, because a lot of people have boats in Italy, seen as it is a large coastline, salt water degrades, like, dye in fabric. And if you have an Italian flag on a boat, the red will start to fade in such a way that it just looks like an Irish flag. I remember being very confused as a young child in Italy, just being like, why does everyone have Irish flags on their boats? And people would be like, ha ha ha, you're so silly. And I'm like, but no, that's what they look like.
Yeah, in Ireland, there was this, like, ridiculous situation. We have this system of, like, a top-up card for our public transport, mostly in Dublin. I don't think they've expanded that in any way. Can you use leap cards for anything else?
No, you can use them on some of the trains that go out of Dublin County. Yeah. But, yeah, they're, like, local. Yeah, it's a Dublin transport system thing. Yeah.
It's a Dublin transport, yeah. It's called the leap card. And it has a frog on it, and it's adorable. And since I've left Ireland, they've grown a bit more sophisticated, and now your name and stuff and photo and everything is on it.
Yeah.
And this has caused a scandal, because due to technical limitation, they cannot print the accent marks found in the Irish language and thus found in, like, a whole host of Irish names. For example, if you're on the Facebook group, you've probably seen me post, and you know that I have one of these accent marks in my name over the A. It's great, because if anyone's thinking, oh, Irish is a complex language, no, this is the only diacritic we have. Yeah. Like, our spelling is fucked up in other ways, but this is the only diacritic we have, and it's a really common one.
And actually, even if you include all the letters that can have the father on it, once you account for the letters we don't have in our alphabet, then actually the alphabet is quite straightforward as alphabets go. But yeah, they claim they can't print them on the cards for some reason. I'm unclear as to why, what the technical limitation is, because I don't know why from a, like, computer point of
view. Yeah, so like everyone is saying, like, the technical limitation excuse is not good enough. I particularly loved the list of names of activists involved in this. They all had, like, about three fathers in their names.
Yeah. I think if you had one father in your name, you would be like, oh, that's annoying. But if you have three, you're just like, well, that's just not my name anymore. Three of the letters are incorrect.
So that was pretty enjoyable. But like, yeah, they're all saying this isn't good enough, including Sean Byrne, who's like the minister for Irish language and culture, being like, yeah, he's the guy in charge of making sure that all kind of like government and semi-governmental services are available in Irish, which, you know, social experiment after social experiment after social experiment has proved that's not something that like a lot of semi-state institutions are able to do in Ireland.
No.
Well,
because often it depends on having enough people in your like in your institution that speak Irish well enough to do it right. So there's often mistakes made for that reason.
But there was some really bad examples like for a while there, and I haven't checked recently, but Dublin Bus, the like only bus provider in the city of Dublin, their website didn't have like an Irish translation. There wasn't like a switch language button anywhere.
That's pretty stupid, and
that's pretty bad. Yeah, it doesn't take that long to like do a kind of slight translation like that if you do it correctly. Anyway, here's Ciarán's hot take that's kind of unfounded, but this kind of seems like from Ciarán's professional experience, I feel like this is what happened. The font they selected to use doesn't come with accent marks.
Yeah, but they could just add the accent mark letters themselves to the font. That wouldn't be difficult.
That wouldn't be difficult, true, but I bet you the person they got to do this doesn't actually have those skills, because it is like it's not necessarily a skill you're taught to edit a font. And in fact, as a graphic designer, you're kind of encouraged not to do that.
Oh no,
because
for sure.
Like fonts are these ornate things they already spent like 5 to 7 years minimum crafting. So you don't go along to someone else's work and be like blop, but you do find a font that has the diacritics of the language you probably plan to support.
Yes, that, or they've purchased a system that encodes everything in like the original 80s ASCII format. So it's a technical problem in that like, oh, it's not like a easily solvable thing. It's in the entire system encodes text in a way that can't store fathers.
Also, I think at this point we should look to Irish language history. Because I think this is a pretty interesting use case, because the Irish language did used to have more diacritics. There's old signs that you can see around Ireland and Dublin where like there'll be a dot above a T or a D, like usually over a consonant. And that got later replaced with a H. This was due to the fact that no one would make us typewriters.
Yeah.
That would print these.
Yeah.
So I say what's going to happen to this is we're going to find some way to write without fathers. This is going to force us.
This is?
Yes.
Okay, well, speaking of things that are going to be forced to change, let's move on to Greece. And Prime Minister Tsipras won his no-confidence vote by one vote, which is, one might say, as tight as it could possibly have been. Yeah, so he won by, so his party has 145 seats out of 300, so they were missing 6 votes they needed, so they got 1 independent, who was going to vote with them anyway. They got 4 from the anal party, who had just left the coalition, but because their leader doesn't like the deal, not because there weren't people in the party who were ministers and members of parliament who wanted to vote for it. And then 1 member of a small centrist party gave them a vote to bring them 151, which is exactly what they needed to remain in government. And on Thursday, they're going to have a vote on the Macedonia deal, and it's unclear whether or not that will pass. So, unclear is where we're at with that. Wait and see.
Yes, Greece, a nation historically not forced to change, especially in recent years.
Yes, not forced by any outsized
international something fund.
That's a fun game we can have in the podcast. Just leave out information.
In this informative podcast of ours.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, speaking of large international blobs of things. Politico is reporting that Macron is not taking Elda's calls. So ALDE, who are the liberals in the European Parliament, there was a big, it was a relatively big deal that Macron's En Marche party, who's kind of polling, what, 20-30%, kind of like reasonably well, they should get a decent chunk of seats in France for the European Parliament, had kind of announced they were going to put together like a joint declaration and probably join ALDE, or like if not officially join them, kind of vote with them as a bloc. And now it seems like they promised they would have the joint declaration by mid-January. Mid-January's kind of gone, basically. There's no word on it happening. They're now saying it might be March, which kind of insinuates they haven't been working on the collaboration at all. And on March, people from on March are kind of saying they're focused on getting MEPs elected domestically. They're not super paying a lot of time into the pan-European effort they were originally talking about as like a big thing, which is, I'm sure, disappointing for a lot of people who were kind of excited of like a centrist, like ALDE-esque pro-European like thing was going to happen, and it's kind of just not happening.
That would be, that really does change the numbers quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like with all kind of projections of the European Parliament. So that'd be interesting if that happens. Yeah, I feel like a lot of like centrist or like establishment news reporting, based on the projections we've seen, it was going to be like, there was a rise in the far right, but don't worry, the Liberal Democrats are here to save us.
Yes, and they're going to do so via, because they've all come together and put aside their differences. And now it's turned out that Macron is, you know, he has important domestic stuff happening and a terrible approval rating that he is focusing on instead of his European reforms, which is... I think the European reforms were the one like consensus thing that most people who kind of vaguely supported Macron were like, oh, and he's going to reform Europe in ways I like.
Well, that's kind of like why he played like better. That was partly why he played better abroad than he did within France.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were pretty standard like center reforms for the European Union. Like I don't necessarily hate a lot of them, but
yeah, no, they're like fixing actual structural problems in the EU.
Instead of doing
like, oh, we're either gonna like massively renegotiate our deal with it, or we're going to insist on like abolishing the European Parliament or something crazy. They're like, no, we all like the EU. We're gonna fix some problems.
Certainly, the best reforms I've ever seen put forward by someone probably in power to like actually implement them.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's unusual for. Well, until recently, it's been unusual for like a head of state who has a lot of clout in the EU to be like, I have problems with how most of like a lot of this works, and here's my like actual proposals to change things.
Mm.
But yeah, just fuck that. It might not happen.
Oh well, that's what you get for dreaming. More status quo politicians.
Yay.
The world is fine. Don't look into climate change. Lies.
Kieran, you're being very pessimistic. Perhaps we should have some sort of grand debate about this.
Oh, God, yes. All right, yes. Moving on to the nerdiest thing I've heard in a while, which is saying a lot.
I just want to stop you here and kind of point out that you've become very anti, like, nerd recently, because you don't like... So... People probably didn't notice this, but Kieran had like a small Twitter spat with people who like Volt. It's like a pan-European.
They wanted to do Macron, but all over Europe.
Yeah, yeah, which seems fine to me. It's not offensive in a lot of ways. And your response to that was like, "What nerds?" But I mean, you know. Nerds got us here. Got us this far, man. You gotta be. You're being kind of anti-expert. If you don't mind me saying.
Okay. Yeah. No. So nerd is just the word that definitely rolls off the tongue when I'm talking about this kind of stuff. Because I'm not talking about the fact that they're intelligent. The issues I have with a lot of Volt's points is that they're incredibly pedantic. They focus on issues that are like. In no way relevant. In no way are they vote winners. They have like a really bad electoral strategy, and the reforms that they do want to do that are decent are those like
really reformist reforms, as in the next time someone who gets into power that isn't Volta, they're just going to get rid of all of them.
Yeah, all right, I take your point.
I think there's
a way of framing it that the response can be it's too easy to make the point I made, which is just like, think we should think about our problems. you've it all figured out and we don't need to talk about it. Is that it, Kira?
Well, no, I think we do need to think about our problems. I don't think Volk does think about their problems. I also don't think Macron thinks about the problems.
Macron thinks he thinks about the problems.
Oh, he does. He definitely does think he thinks. So for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, we're referring to Macron's plans to stage a grand debate tour.
Mm.
Nerd. I'm doubling down on it now.
So you think he's like a debate club hack who's just like, he's just like, we just need to sit down and talk about these things as opposed to giving natural solutions.
I feel like, because there's a certain sense of like, well, that's rich kind of coming from him type of thing, because there were several points when, like, I don't know, the heads of unions came to talk and the responses weren't necessarily talking to them.
Like Macron's whole thing when he came into power initially was like, I'm going to isolate myself off as a decision maker and people can talk to me via my aides. No one's allowed contact with the actual president.
It's
very different to this.
That and like his events of just like verbally talking down to a kid at a parade is just like, it's just very, the whole him being a chill guy during the campaign, that image very quickly unraveled. In a way I've never really seen before of these kind of like establishment political figures. I feel like with Obama, for a lot of people it was still like a couple of years or a couple of months when he was out of office. That people were like, the veneer of his like cool dude election campaign took a while to fade off. Macron, it happened in like the matter of weeks.
Yeah, and like I think Obama's a good counter example, because with him it didn't initially return, but it did return during his like re-election campaign, like after a while. And you're kind of like, oh, actually, this guy really, like, he's really well researched, but he's like really chill about it, and then is able to just, you know, convince people over to his side using his like good arguments and charisma. But yeah. Macron has just become like an angry man. He's just constantly shouting at people or making like snide remarks behind golden desks. Which I just feel like it's so far from where we were with his election campaign, which was very much like, oh, a young guy who kind of gets it and he wants to make reforms because it's like for the best and he's an economist and he knows what's right. And now he's just like, it's not working.
Yeah, so there's like this change of tact where now, yes, he's going to be meeting with the people and holding like town hall style debates.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who the debates are going to be like against, because he hasn't really stated that. He says he's meeting with mayors of like various towns, and there's a handful of like national rally mayors. Especially he seems to be starting the tour in like the northern parts of France, which is like the kind of post-industrial part of France that like lost a lot of manufacturing jobs in recent years. So that's where the like National Rally and Front National kind of swept to popularity, but so did people like Mélenchon's La France Insoumise and things like that. It's a land of contrasts, but he hasn't really stated who he's going to be debating, because he says it's meant to address the issues raised by the Yellow Vest protests.
Yes.
But who's he debating against? Macron still, even after all this, doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to be like taking audience questions. Or like,
I suspect not. Well, no, maybe. Yeah. You know, if it's town hall style debate, that's how those work. It's questions from you don't necessarily need two people who like disagree a lot, but they get questions from the audience.
Things can be like a bit like controlled to a certain extent. So it'll be interesting, because I've seen America does these quite a bit, and I've seen American town hall debates that are very controlled, like, and like the people they call on don't look too crazy. And then I've seen like American town hall style debates where things go flying off the rails very quickly and everyone's just yelling at this like tiny like ever shrinking Republican congressman who like no one knew who he was before this.
Yeah. I think because they've had them in the UK the last few parliamentary elections, and it's seen as the thing you technically call a debate that's not a debate, because you can effectively, what they've been doing is doing them, like, the candidates do them separately, and they're not even in the same room.
Yeah.
And they're, like, they're kind of different, but I think that's kind of sounds more like what this is, because it'll be meeting with mayors who Macron will, I imagine, talk to beforehand, and then they'll do a town hall debate. It's unclear what exactly will happen.
Yeah, they'll be broadcast live, presumably on Facebook Live.
Sounds good. Do you want to go to one with me, and we can wear the Macron t-shirts that we sell in the podcast Tee Public store?
That would be great. We'd have to improve our French substantially.
Yeah, my French is not... I would not be able to follow what's going on.
No.
But we could Twitch stream us watching it.
Monsieur Macron, Monsieur President, où est la toilette? Answer me this.
I'm going to move this along. I'm talking about Macron now.
Last little bit about this is that you found something from DW that suggests the polling predicts that people aren't really interested in going to these.
Yeah. So Deutsche Welle... quoted if I had a, they often do this. They often quote, like, polling suggests this, or there was a poll that said this, and then they don't tell me where the poll is from. And then I spend a significant amount of time trying to find the poll. And this is one of the rare cases I've not been able to find where this polling comes from. But yeah. Polling seems to suggest that people aren't super interested in engaging in this, so attendance might not be good. But if it's in, like, a physical town hall in a relatively medium-sized French town, you could probably fill it with bad, like, you wouldn't need that many people to fill it.
Yeah, but like they're hoping to broadcast this live, so yeah. If it's a general poll that asked all of France, then yeah. Yeah, it's a problem with like big outlets like DW don't like link their sources, because the way they found that is they have like a huge multilingual translating staff probably.
Yeah,
and like if you search these keywords in French, you'd probably find it quite easily.
Yeah, possibly. Secret, yeah. French Google. There was also on the... They had also quoted somewhere that more recent polling about the Gilets Jaunes protests has approval for the protests around 60% now. So before Christmas, I think in mid-December, we were at 72%. So, yeah. But 60 versus Macron's approval rating, which is like, what is it now? It's like 20% or something.
Yeah, 24, like last checked.
Yeah, 24 isn't... 25. He has a 25% approval rating, a 72 disapproval. So, yeah, that's just like... on that standard, the protests are like very widely approved of. And... you could possibly argue that, like, well, most of the people were non-Macron voters anyway, and if you consider, like, turnout, etc., like, Macron's voters still probably support him, you're like, well, that's not enough.
Well, yeah, we still had, like, last time we had a breakdown of the polls, it was, like, above 50% of, like, Macron people who, like, people who had voted for Macron in the first round also supported the Gilets Jaunes.
Yes, yeah, because, He sold himself kind of as one chill guy who's going to do lots of reforms, but also chill guy who's going to do different reforms to the existing reforms.
Mm.
And a lot of people kind of view this as you're just doing the stuff you couldn't get Hollande to do.
Yeah,
but it's in the same vein of the stuff people didn't like. So it's, you know, it's kind of the same. Anyway,
moving on to another super chill dude who was. He was cool for about 5 seconds there, under as far as Giron is concerned. Mm-hmm. This stupid thing that happened. All right. Guy Verhofstadt, who is the head of ALDE, the Allied Liberal Democrats of Europe, who have been calling Macron nonstop, apparently, to no reply. He's the former Belgian prime minister, I believe, and he's like kind of rebranded himself as this like defender of the European status quo and the European dream. And we're talking to this off mic, but he like became quite popular in the UK up in the run to Brexit, because Nigel Farage would always like play to the cameras in the European Parliament, and those clips would go viral. But then also like Guy Verhofstadt would always respond, and from a certain perspective, he would make Farage look a bit stupid, and those videos would go viral in the UK. So, yeah, Guy Verhofstadt, big guy, but like he's a part of ALDE. He always votes kind of like very typically centrist, and with the establishment parties, like very rarely do ALDE as a party disagree with the like centre-left, centre-right consensus that occurs in the European Parliament. So this is why it was particularly interesting that today, when something put forward by the European left / Nordic Green left, a bill to an amendment to withdraw Mario Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank, from the Group of 30, or G30, as it's indicated. This is a international group of bankers and financial institutions, like heads of financial institutions. They exist to discuss things of like international finance. Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of a terrible group. Like it's not the first time this has been like called in concern in the European Parliament. Actually, quite recently, in January of last year, the European Ombudsman Emily O'Reilly was like, he shouldn't be a part of this group. It's viewed as like undue influence over the European Central Bank, that you like regularly meet up with the like head of a bunch of American financial institutions in this like very secretive group. It's also like a big problem is they don't really publish what they talk about.
Yeah, it's not like the, you know, the G8 or G7 when they have, and the G20 and stuff, where they at the end of it release like a public communique of things they discussed and agree on and stuff they want to talk about more at the next meeting. It's more of a, they met, we don't know what they talked about, banking, I assume.
So yeah, like the European left, Nordic Green left, who don't like international finance to begin with, and the Greens, who are on a similar place, and then some far right Eurosceptic people who don't really have any coherent like worldview, they just want to see it all burn. They all kind of like voted for him to be withdrawn from this group. But weirdly enough, Guy Verhofstadt also voted for this, along with one other ALDE MEP. 20 Social Democrats, and I believe 5 absolutely buck wild members of the EPP. What were they doing? Verhofstadt voted against this, and the voting record only came out today, so people were like, this is weird. This came out at like 11 a.m. 2 days ago, on the 17th of January, 11 a.m. this came out, and then by 2:30 on the same day, Verhofstadt had to declare that he'd voted for the Draghi amendment by mistake. He supported them being him being in the group of 30.
They should include like error bars whenever they show like votes in the European Parliament, just to say like, you know, there's many people in a room, some people are going to make mistakes, they won't press the right button.
There's 2 buttons, it's confusing.
Yeah, so the amendment passes by 6 votes plus or minus 12.
And this special margin of error for when Verhofstadt makes a mistake. But the bill was rejected by like 440 MEPs rejected it, so it didn't really matter. But it's so funny that like I'm not even sure Verhofstadt noticed this until it became like a thing when it was released today, or like on the 17th of January, 2 days after the actual vote had occurred.
Yeah, almost certainly not. I imagine if you're in the European Parliament, you vote on enough things that you might not forget the ones you made mistakes. He might have realized at the time and it didn't matter, so then forgot about it. Yeah. Anyway, that's quite funny. Speaking of things that are not funny, but are horrifying, the due to Die Linke in the German parliament prodding the government about it, the government released the numbers of refugees that they've deported to other EU countries following the Dublin Agreement, or I think Dublin 3 it's known as, which is the controversial and like disputed agreement now. Like a lot of the EU countries just don't really abide by it, which is refugees are supposed to be processed at the country they arrived in and then distributed in an undefined way around the EU. But the way it's actually worked is people land in, say, Italy and then make their way to Germany immediately because they can't stay in Italy or they don't want to stay in Italy and they want to get to Germany. That was the goal in the first place. So Germany this year has sent, or last year in 2018, sent a record number back to Italy and other countries, but predominantly to Italy, which is amusing because this report comes at the same time as Salvini is like staunchly saying, I'm keeping the ports closed. No more migrants will get into Italy at all. But he did not think about his northern land border. But you know, this is only like 8,000, 9,000 refugees. So it's really not that many compared to the numbers that you would otherwise be seeing yearly coming into Italy's ports. But it's tickled me a bit.
Yeah, it's something.
It's certainly a thing that happened.
I also like the idea that this is now going to, like, if we go into Lega's origins as La Lega Nord, what a place to strike. You're anti-immigrant, what if we filled the north of Italy with immigrants?
That is chosen.
And our last little bit of nonsense for the podcast is that everyone's kind of worried about what's going to happen to the UK post-Brexit, and is there going to be, like, what's going to happen? Is there going to be food shortages? What's going to happen with international trades? You know, the UK is heavily reliant, especially for like food and medicine, on like other like surrounding countries. But don't worry, guys. The Faroe Islands are ready to sign a post-Brexit free trade agreement.
Whoop whoop.
The Faroe Islands, a country that, as far as I understand, is probably not quite a country. like I'm actually very surprised it has the ability to do this of its own accord. That's like the biggest. That was the main reason I looked into this.
It's part of Denmark.
Yes, it's so Denmark is like there's Denmark and then there's the Kingdom of Denmark.
Yeah,
and the Kingdom of Denmark includes like the Faroe Islands and Greenland.
I apologize. It's not technically part of. It's not part of Denmark, but it's like it's a self-governing thing. Connected to Denmark.
Yeah, it's Denmark's Isle of Man. Yes. And I don't really know how that works either.
And I don't want to find out.
I don't care to. All I know is there's like only one flight a week from Dublin to get to the Isle of Man.
That's plenty.
I knew someone who was like had divorced parents and one of the parents had moved to the Isle of Man.
Wow.
It made things hard.
Well, you know, This is why the Isle of Man and Ireland need a comprehensive trade agreement a la the UK and the Faroe Islands.
The Faroe Islands, the last time I heard about the Faroe Islands is that they were very angry that Google Maps had not like come to the Faroe Islands to do like a street view thing in Faroe Islands. So they set up their own scheme where they attached a bunch of cameras to sheep and then collected the images. Because apparently sheep just have free reign on that island.
Is this real?
Yes.
I feel like this is the second or third week in a row where I've had to clarify whether or not something you're saying is bullshit or not. I think it's
Let me look at this Faroe sheep street view.
I'll put it in the show notes. It'll go in the show notes.
Sheep view.
I believe you.
Sheep view 360 is what this is called.
Because if we just call this sheep view, people wouldn't know what we meant.
You know, it actually produced some really beautiful shots of the island.
Are they useful, like, car navigation or walking navigation shots?
So, walking navigation for sure. But the whole thing is that, like, sheep are just allowed to go wherever they want in the Faroe Islands.
Yes.
There's no actual fencing in for their sheep livestock, including this very important picture they want us to see of like a house that's had its entire roof covered in grass. And the sheep is on top of that, so you probably get some killer.
How did they get on top of the house?
There's some sort of way. Okay. But yeah, they apparently got everywhere, and there was this whole expedition. It's very well documented.
Okay, well, I'm going to spend my evening reading about this. I'm happy to call our less depressing than usual podcast here.
The important end of show links. All right, we have a website, previouslyineurope.eu, that contains all the important links, such as our Twitter account. Want to see Kieran get into weird fucking arguments with political parties that you've never heard of? Then check out at Prev in Europe, P-R-E-V in Europe. Sometimes I will use that account to fight people. Sometimes I'll just use it to retweet the tweets of me fighting people. We also have a Facebook group. That's usually where we have a lot of our conversations and talk to people who listen to the podcast. You should join that Facebook group. It's super cool to hang out in. I'll give you one of those thumbs up emojis, or possibly a heart emoji. I play fast and loose with a heart emoji. So just search Facebook for Previously in Europe. We have a TeePublic store that's in the show notes, where you can buy two t-shirts now.
Yeah.
One is a Macron union-busting joke, and the other is a play on the George Soros conspiracy, instead of George Soros, it's the fucking two-tailed dog party, which is a parody party from Hungary. It's a very deep cut, but do you want that on a t-shirt? Go ahead. Leave us iTunes reviews. That stuff helps a lot. If you don't do that, that's fine, but tell a friend. That also helps a lot. That'll be really cool. And if you feel like your area is not serviced enough by Google Street View, why not consider tying a bunch of 360 cameras to your friends after they've been recommended our show?
It's at this point of the podcast that Kieran gets delirious and I cut him off and stop the recording.
What if we want like 360 views of them checking out our podcast?
I'm stopping recording now.